Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Wait, Kenny, did you click the button? I didn't hear it this time. I'm nervous.
I did. You want me to restart?
No. Hello, and welcome to episode 244. Tonight's show is brought to you by Kenny's back again. Have meat rice. Cover your chin. Full face.
God. Please stop.
I don't really have, I'm going to say this and then y'all are going to laugh and make jokes because I think of like seven things. Kind of wrapped up things on building out the workshop. I also have been paint stripping my Esker for a refresh of color and paint scheme and parts, and it's going to be dope, and I'm not going to tell you how it's going to be built until it's built.
We didn't talk about the bears last time, did we?
The bears hadn't happened last time.
Okay, I didn't think so.
So
Kenny, while you were gone, we recorded, and then we had a bear incident.
Was that the same day?
Maybe.
No, I feel like that was Monday night. Anyways, Andrea went to bed, and I was like, I'm not really tired. I'm going to go paint strip my frame. And I've been using Citra Strip. And I'm going to paint a steel frame and fork, a surly fork, all at the same time. Anyways, I was out in the shop. Taco started losing his mind. Andrea thought that I was doing something that was making him lose his mind.
Yeah, like I was in bed. I was like asleep. I actually might have actually gone all the way to sleep. And then the dog started barking. And I'm like, Matt's just doing something that's making the dogs bark because they'll bark at anything.
And I knew that wasn't the case because I was like, it'd be really rude of me to come out here and make the dogs upset while she's trying to sleep, and I don't want to be inconsiderate. So I was listening to music in headphones, and I was using a plastic paint stripper or scraper, actually a plastic razor blade, and a paintbrush and saran wrap. Like, that's all that I was using. And dogs are losing their mind, and I'm like, fuck. And they, like, don't stop. So I, like, get my gloves off. Set things down, and when I knocked I had the door to the shop closed because it was late, and I had lights on. I didn't want like 1,000 moths in there with me trying to help because they don't have thumbs. So I kick the door open, and fucking big things scatter. So I grab the door and hold it shut, and I'm like, fucking bear. And I'm like, well, I have to get in the house to get a shotgun with rubber slugs in it. So like any logical man in Crocs and
your underwear.
This is important to the story. It's really hot. So I was wearing a t-shirt, underwear, and Crocs. And yes, I'm an adult. You can paint strip a frame in your underwear. There's no laws against it. It's fine. So I'm like, what's the only big thing in here? There's no shovels in here because they're over there by the bear. There's no anything in here that's big and heavy. I'm like, oh, half inch breaker bar. So I grab that and I run the 18 yards or whatever from the
and in the meantime he yells several times. And
well, when I kicked the door open, I was like, holy shit, because it brought the holy shit out of me. I don't know how else to put it.
He yelled hey a few times.
You're supposed to say hey bear, know. And then they go away.
Yeah, so like if he'd said hey bear, it would have been different, but he yelled hey repeatedly, and then I just hear like, and
no.
I'm like, he's cut his fucking arm off.
No. I didn't just go...
It sounded like that.
What
from
I did
where I
is
was.
I grabbed my half-inch breaker bar and I ran the 18 yards in Crocs in two-wheel drive mode going... I did my best greased-up deaf guy from Family Guy and...
You can't catch me.
They didn't catch me. So I grabbed my shotgun with rubber slugs in it and pop outside with a headlamp on, and there is a bear in the tree between the house and the shop, and it's a small bear. And then I realized that mama bear is on the other side of the shop by the shed, and I'm like, oh, I was between the mama bear and the cub, and that could have been real bad. And then I shot it with rubber slugs and accidentally chased it further back up the tree, and then the mom tried climbing over the fence and
which,
decided
yeah, like,
to go the
so
long
like
way.
The baby bear will climb the tree and be quiet when it's trying to just disappear. But then once you make a loud noise in its general direction with a shotgun, it starts screaming. And it sounds very similar to a human being in distress, if you've ever wondered. I should put that sound bite in here if I can figure it out.
So why'd you shoot the baby?
But
I was trying to scare it off.
Yeah, like basically, so we've had problem bears in our neighborhood for a while because one, there used to be a guy that fed them, like straight up, like they were like his pet bears. He fed them dog food and like they became very acclimated to humans. We've had that. Several bears were euthanized as a result of that man, and then he died. And now there's a drought, and there are also no berries and like plant things that they would normally forage on this time of year. So not only are there some that are acclimated to humans, or that were maybe acclimated when they were cubs, but there's also reason for them to be searching for food sources that might be a little risky. And so this mother bear is teaching her baby bears, if you can't find food in the woods, go to a house. And so while it seems extraordinarily cruel to shoot at a baby bear with a rubber slug while it's in a tree, you might be saving that baby bear's life in the future if you teach it to just be afraid of humans and houses and human food sources.
Sure. And I'm not that concerned about you shooting baby bear with a rubber slug. I'm more wondering, why did you not shoot the mama bear with the rubber slug?
Oh, where I was standing and where I saw it, it was too far away to shoot with rubber slugs.
Gotcha. Yeah, they're really close range.
And what are the rules? What are the rules on just like shooting a bear that's on your property? Are you not allowed to do that?
No.
So the rules are, the bear, in order for you to use lethal force, it has to be threatening your life or any human life, livestock life, real property is how they say it. So like if the bear is ripping the door of your shed off to get to what's inside, you are permitted to shoot it lethally. If it's already in the shed and it's, or a car, if it's tearing your car apart, you're allowed to. But if it's like goes in your open shed and like takes out the bucket of cat food, that cat food is not covered. It's not like real property. It's destroying a bucket of cat food. So like that is not authorized as lethal or whatever, legal use of lethal force. Pets also, like pets are not covered. So if a bear attacks your dog, you're not allowed to kill the bear. But your livestock, like if it's attacking your chickens, which I don't know, like I don't make money off my chickens, so I don't think they're that important, but it is legal. Like if it's,
that's pretty weird rule that they put a chicken above a dog.
Yeah, it's because livestock is agriculture, and you might, like, if you have a chicken farm and that's your livelihood, like that's how you make your income, that's considered protected, whereas your dog
is probably not fucking with the bear also. You know, when Mr. Biscuits, the off-leash schnauzer, is chasing a bear around your yard, you don't get to just shoot the bear. Like,
it's kind of weird. I've always thought that was a little weird, but yeah, like, so humans, real estate, buildings, cars, livestock, like those are all authorized uses of lethal force. Just things around your property, no, like it's not okay. But the rubber slugs are really good. Like last year we had one that, I mean, I was working on my shed, like, I don't know, 30 yards away from where our shop is. And so I had the shop door open and this bear just walked into the shop and picked up a bucket of cat food and walked off with it. And I yelled at it and it ran off and dropped the cat food. But then it came back like a few days later and I actually saw it like on its way into the property and got the shotgun with rubber slugs and just nailed it as soon as it came around the corner. And that thing didn't come back. Like they aren't the dumbest animals. So like they remember that stuff, you know, like that particular set of bears probably will not come back looking for food unless they get really, really desperate.
So Matt, did you hit the bear?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah. It may have dripped some bear juices out of the tree.
Who makes that slug?
Don't know.
Lightfield, I think is the brand.
All right.
Yeah. They're extremely underpowered type close range stuff. Like, I mean, if you hit a human with it 20 yards away, it would hurt like hell. They would bleed, bruise. You might break a rib, but like, it's not going to kill them. So it's just painful. It's not lethal. I mean, if you like, I don't know, point blank, put a gun against a bear's head and shot it, then maybe, but I don't know. They're pretty fucking tough animals.
What's the durometer of that rubber? Is it kind of like, can you tell? Is it like a giant pencil eraser?
Don't know.
I mean, it's pretty hard. Like, you can poke your finger in there and touch it, and it's solid.
I'm going to have to go get some rubber shotgun slugs and play with them.
Yeah.
Yep.
But continue.
That was my excitement, so.
Oh, well, I mean, we waited. So, like, the baby bear climbed further up the tree and, like, started just screeching. And it wouldn't come down and the mom wouldn't come back until we turned all the lights off and just got quiet. And then she came back out and she climbed the tree. The other cub climbed the tree with her. So all three bears were in the tree. And this is in front of our house. I mean, like, right in front of our house. And then eventually, like, all three of them went down, like, climbed back down. And Matt, like, ran back off the porch as they were leaving and, like, shot one more time at them just to, like, make a loud noise. I mean, they were probably a little too far away for you to actually hit them, but yeah. I mean, it at least, like, scared them a little bit more, which is really what you just want them to be afraid of humans.
Are That's you allowed to cut a tree down that they are in your yard?
I mean, yeah, if you
the
wanna,
more you
like,
fuck around, the more you find out.
Yeah, if you want to, like, drop a fucking 200-pound bear on your head, then sure.
I'm just, you know. Just the thoughts that I have.
She was big. She's a big girl. Like, when you see black bears are admittedly, they're not as gigantic as grizzly bears, but, like, when you see one that close, like, it's pretty intimidating. They're just, and they just run up a tree. Like, they just kind of, like, bonk, bonk, like, three or four strides, and they're, like, way in the tree.
Yeah, they're pretty big. I've seen quite a few.
Someone else go.
Kenny, how was your trip?
It was good, just went to Knoxville, hung out with family. Nothing crazy. So yeah, did a trip. What else have I been doing? Rode some moto on Sunday, just explored some stuff I haven't seen before. Similar area to a couple shows ago. Not like I didn't expect cool riding. I was more just exploring. And there was some private property I ran into, but there's just cool stuff out there. Did a really cool climb that's like, I don't know, it's probably 10 miles out and back with like 5,000 feet of climbing. So you just rip up this mountain and then rip right back down the other side. And on the map, it looks like I could make this really cool, huge loop. But apparently it was, I don't even think it was marked as private property on the Garmin thing, but it didn't really look. I think it's a relatively new development where I think some family used to own it or something. And maybe it was like semi-open, but now it's like some, I don't know, wildlife research area or something like that. So anyway, I had to double back, and then I took out some other road and did about another 30 mile out and back on that road. Yep, it was cool. Just went out in the middle of nowhere, saw one other person. That was about it. There's an old mining town there, which is pretty cool. I say town. There's an old mining building, and all the buildings were standing, which is pretty cool. I say all the buildings. Some of the large buildings were still standing. So I rode my moto through some of those and just kind of like looked around, which is kind of cool. Because they were big. They were like, I'm guessing it was some type of processing that they were doing down there. But it was neat. They were probably, I don't know, each building was probably 50 yards long. So they were pretty big. I mean, at least kind of 150 feet, 200 feet, maybe longer. So you could actually like rip through them, drift a little bit, just concrete floors. You had to be careful because, you know, there were some giant, I don't even know what you call them, just holes in the floor.
Pieces of infrastructure.
Yeah, they used to have whatever, some giant furnace or a pump or a who knows what. But anyway, just cool seeing that kind of stuff. I always like that urban exploration type stuff. It's pretty fun. But yeah, that's really it. Did I do anything else cool? I swear there was something that I did.
Did you fly to Tennessee?
I did, yeah.
How was the airport?
I mean, airports suck, basically. Traveling in mass transit is the worst thing that a human being can do, basically. But whatever. I mean, I wasn't in any huge rush. I just kind of deal with it. I got my laptop. I could do like some work or whatever. It was fine. But one of my flights did like maybe 8 hours before my flight. American Airlines was just like, hey, your flight, that's no longer a flight. So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I'm glad I bought this 6 months ago. Pretty cool. I mean, it wasn't completely their fault. I think Dallas was getting completely fucked by weather. And it was my flight from Salt Lake to Dallas, Dallas to Knoxville. And yeah, anyway, the Dallas one, or the flight, I think it was the flight into Dallas actually got canceled. But anyway, I had to go rebook it and shit. So my ass had to go all the way to Miami. So flight straight to Miami, which is like 5 hours, and then backtrack to Knoxville. So that sucked ass. But yeah, I mean, whatever. I will say on that flight, I don't even know why I didn't really get the whole gist of what was going on, but I had a decent seat. Like, I paid for a reasonable seat, like, I don't know, some business class seat or something. And they asked me to move for some type of reason. It wasn't really a full flight. I don't really know what was going on. They just asked me if I wanted to move to another aisle seat. And I was like, I'm sure, I don't care. But it was first class, which is kind of nice.
Damn.
So they just bumped me up to first class. So I guess someone could sit together. I don't really know. But anyway, traveling is traveling. I've only had a couple of like super gnarly things happen to me in all my years of traveling. So it is what it is. I really don't enjoy it. I really don't want to fly more than once or twice a year. It's just not really a good time.
So was that better or worse than the time people figured out you were experiencing your 21st birthday in the air and you got super plastered?
Well, that wasn't a bad time. I mean, that was an interesting one. I mean...
It could have turned bad.
Well, I mean, it turned slightly bad because I missed my next flight. Yeah, that was crazy. That was probably... When was that?
I don't remember that story.
Yeah, that was probably 2003-ish, something like that. And I was doing my 21st birthday in Vegas, meeting my family there, surprisingly enough. My family. It was like my brothers and my dad. So my mom and my sister were not there. But anyway, it's not like I was there with all, you know, a whole bunch of college buddies or anything. It was family, but still kind of fun and cool that we wanted to do the 21st there. But I guess, yeah, people on the plane got wind that I was going to Vegas. It's not like I stood up on a plane. I'm like, fucking Vegas, baby.
How would people on a plane know why you are going to Las Vegas?
I think it was the guy sitting next to me. He was a nice guy. I don't remember all the details, but you know, it's kind of like, hey man, like, where are you going? What you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm going to Vegas doing our 21st birthday there, meeting my family. He's like, no shit. And he's like, I'm going to buy you a drink on the plane right now. I was like, all right. And so I got a Jack and Coke or something on the plane. And then like all the people around me, I don't know what was going on, but yeah, everyone around me was like, what? He's going to Vegas. And so, you know, the guy bought me like a couple more drinks, and then like all the people around me bought drinks, and I had like 10 Jack and Cokes on a 2-hour flight.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good idea. I mean, have you ever turned down
21-year-old glasses? That's a dope
story.
Yeah,
have you ever turned
my
down
38-year-old glasses? No way.
Have you ever turned down free booze on an airplane before? I fucking haven't. I never will.
I never have, but I've never been offered either.
So anyway, the rest of that story was what it was. I can't remember what happened. I think it was a multitude of things. I think I already had a super, super short layover wherever I was going to get to Vegas ultimately. Because where would I be going from? Was it Memphis? It must have been Memphis to somewhere and somewhere to Vegas. But anyway.
Yeah, because Memphis had a direct flight from Vegas.
Yeah, but
to
to fly Memphis to Texas and then Texas to Vegas.
I think
it was still in the same
direction. Yeah, I think it was something along those lines for whatever reason. Because I'm sure like a lot of things,
Dallas.
The direct flight to Vegas is like, you know, $1,500 or something insane. So that's probably why I didn't take that flight. But anyway, I think it was I had a super, super short layover, like 15 minutes or something like that. And maybe I had to, it might have been Dallas actually, because maybe I had to get on that stupid ass train that goes in a circle, but it's not really a circle around the airport. And like the train won't fucking go. There's no train that goes backwards. So if you have to go like one terminal over, you got to go 9 terminals over. Like you got to go Z to T to whatever the fuck. Anyway, really dumb.
Yeah. Like if you're at B and you need to get to A, you got to go to Z and
that's
then A. Like
something
you have to keep
along
going
those lines. So I think all that combined with me being getting progressively more and more drunk as I like waited around, I missed my connecting flight. Like I couldn't figure out how to get to wherever my flight was. I probably couldn't read my phone or whatever. I was probably actually in the day, now that I think about it, that was 03. So my ass had like some printed ticket or something, and maybe they changed the gate. I can't remember. Regardless, I just like walked up to some random, like whatever the closest kiosk was. And I was like, hey, I'm drunk as shit and I missed my flight. And they were super nice to me because I guess they got the story that I was turning 21 and going to Vegas. So they didn't charge me anything and they like found another flight and I was there. an hour or two later.
So in a similar vein, but not, I once had a connecting flight and it was running like my first flight, like didn't leave on time.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, no, that's never a good feeling.
Oh, shit. Well, I'm like looking at the times and I like call the stewardess over and I'm like, hey, I was like, I'm probably going to miss my flight. She's like, okay. I was like, I only have this bag. Like, I didn't even have a bag in the, or like, I had a bag in the overhead compartment. I didn't have a checked bag or anything. And I was like, my only bag is right here above this. I was like, and I was probably like 21 or 3, right? And I was like, I'm pretty fit and I'm not too ashamed to run through the airport. I like said something along these lines and I'm like, if you could just have no one get up until I'm at the front, like, I might make it. And she's like, hun, you can try. And sure enough, like, we were landing and like before the seatbelt light turned off, she's like, if everyone could remain seated, we have one passenger with an extremely tight connection that he would like to try to make. And like, we stopped, the light turns off, and I like stood up and grabbed my shit. And like, as I'm like going up to the front of the plane, there's like different people that are like, good luck, hope you make it. I made that bitch.
There you go.
I was like one of the last people getting on the plane, and I just like walk up with my printed boarding pass and I'm like, am I in the right spot? So anyways, Andrea should talk about her week in case you're done.
I guess I got one more flight story. I'm sure it's been brought up on the show before, but I was probably, I have no idea how old I was, maybe 16, somewhere in that zone, somewhere around driving age. But I went and partied with one of my brothers at his college and got super drunk, and my flight, I don't know whose idea it was, but we just partied that night, didn't get back to the house until like 2 or 3 a.m. and my flight was at like 6 a.m. and that was super bad, super duper bad. Yep.
Did you get there?
Oh, I got there and everything. I don't remember how I got to the airport, to be honest. Like, maybe my brother dropped me off, maybe I took a taxi or some shit. I really don't remember at all, but I got to the airport and I got, like, I was on the plane, I was on my flight, and I was just fucking green, because, you know, I mean, hangovers are not good, but this was like a hangover just starting, and it was super fucking bad. I don't really get like a ton of motion sickness or any of that kind of stuff. Because, you know, there's nothing worse than like
sobering up and starting to be hungover while you're still awake instead of just waking
up
hungover.
It's so bad. And, you know, just being in that, nobody wants to have that experience like in the public on a fucking plane in like the middle seat or whatever I was. It was very bad. It was the same thing. If you had like violent diarrhea or whatever, you don't want to be in a damn airport. It's like the worst thing in the world, right? But in this case, yeah, I thought I was going to be fine. You know how those morning hangovers go. You're like, yeah, I'm going to take a shower and I'm like, I'm going to be fine. And then like, you're not fine. That was definitely the situation. And I'm sure everybody around me knew, like, I'm sure I looked green as shit. For all I know, I stunk of alcohol. I have no idea. But they were very, you could tell that they were like on alert. And the plane is taking off, actively taking off. Like, we are 100 feet off the ground. And I got full green. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to vomit. This is not going to be good. And I just stood bolt upright. And you should have seen, you know how people are on freaking airplanes. People are like molasses.
These people were like,
oh my God, this was some military cats. Precision shit. Everybody in like all the rows around me got up out of their seats in a military fashion. And I ran to the bathroom, and the stewardess, who was like buckled into her jump seat, was yelling at me that like I couldn't use the bathroom. I'm like, well, I'm gonna throw up on you or on the floor. And she's like, okay, you can use the bathroom. And so I went in the bathroom and threw up in an airplane while it was taking off.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, it was not the best. I was you know, those are the things you learn.
Not your best moment.
No, those are the things you learn when you're young, you know? You gotta push the limits, and that was the limit.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are most of my airplane stories.
I mean, like, I don't ever fly. Like, the last time I flew, I think, was to go to Interbike somewhere in the early, mid 2000s, like, around 2010, 13, probably.
13, probably.
Yeah.
Was that after Outdoors? Or did we ever go to an Interbike? I can't remember. I don't think we ever did.
No, it wasn't with Outdoors. I just went because I was, like, racing a bunch.
Okay.
Some of the other women I'd talked to were like, yeah, you can go to Interbike and like chat with manufacturers and stuff and find sponsors. And I was trying to do that. And like, I took my cyclocross bike to do the Interbike cyclocross race.
Oh, Cross Vegas.
Yeah. And that was like the worst thing that's ever happened to me is I got to my hotel room and TSA had opened my bike bag and unseated one of my tires and dumped sealant into the bag.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That was real nice of them to do that. And so I had to deal with getting my tire seated and reinflated and have some sealant in it before the race. But it worked out. You know, there's like a bunch of people there. So like you can roll up and be like, yo, can I use this air compressor you have for these pro ladies that are going to just kick my ass and I'm going to finish in the back? And they're like, sure. And just popped it back on.
But your big problem was you had to get from the, you were planning to ride from the hotel to the race.
Yeah.
And then you couldn't.
I don't even remember how I got to the race. I got a ride with some, I don't remember if it was a shuttle service or a person. I don't even remember. I don't know. But I got there and raced. I wasn't last, but definitely wasn't in like the lead racing group or anything.
Yeah. Traveling. I've unfortunately, yeah, between working for a corporate place and other stuff, I wouldn't say I fly like I've flown more than the normal person, but definitely a decent amount. You know, Europe a handful of times. Yeah. So maybe it's probably semi-normal, but I still really don't like it.
Yeah, I haven't flown in a very long time, and if I never have to fly again, I will not care. I don't care. And I know this is going to piss some people off. They're like, traveling is the best thing you can ever do to like understand more people and cultures. And I'm like, yeah, I can see the value in that. I don't disagree. But like, I don't even travel to different parts of the state that much to see like other mountains, because like, there's shit within a 50-mile radius of here that's fucking amazing that I've never fucking seen. So I'll go do that instead.
I think, and this is not
I'll be perfectly happy with it.
Yeah, and this is not a dig at all. I'm with you, Andrea. I've enjoyed a lot of stuff. I've enjoyed places I've been in Europe, all the states I've been to here. Totally get it. Meeting new people and new cultures, new stuff, new food, whatever. It's cool. I get it. It's not really my jam, though, in the same way that I'm not even that interested in going to all the restaurants around here because I'm not a foodie. It's just not my jam. I mean, I can enjoy it, totally can appreciate it, but it's not my driving force. Really, I think what most people should try to do, and it's not that you shouldn't travel, not saying that at all, but generally speaking, if you should set up your life in a way that you don't feel like you have to take vacations. Set your life up in a way that you live in a place where you can enjoy going out and doing whatever, and then you don't have to travel as much. And when you do, maybe you'll actually enjoy it more. I don't know. That's just a thought. And you also save a shitload of money. So that's just my take on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like our, so like the wildlife officer for our area came by the next day after the bear thing, because I had texted him like, hey, can we get some more rubber slugs? We used them all last night. And he came by and we were talking, and he's like, do you know about how to get to whatever spot? I'm like, yeah, I know. So apparently the bighorn sheep in this area, no one since 2023, I guess, has been able to fill their sheep hunting tag in this area since then. It's been several years. And so they're going to do a count of the sheep. Like, they want to get an idea of the population of the bighorn sheep in our area. He's like, have you seen any sheep around? I'm like, yeah, I've seen some here. And he's like, do you know how to get to this spot? I'm like, yeah, I know that. I was like, I know how to get to, I was like, anywhere north of like the Sangre de Cristo Mountains are like a strip of mountains that are relatively narrow. It's like one big ridgeline. And the halfway point of that ridgeline, like north to south, is Hayden Pass. And I was like, look, anything north of Hayden Pass, it's like, if you need to get into that spot, just tell someone to text me or call me, and I will tell you exactly how to get in there the easiest way possible. It's not going to be easy, but the easiest way possible, I can tell you.
The least difficult.
Yeah, the least difficult way to get into any spot in the mountains on this end. And it's because, like, okay, I've never been to this spot. I'm going to figure out how to go there. It might take two or three trips for me to figure out how to go there, but that's what I do. And so, like, I know just, like, all the little nooks and crannies of just this area, which is cool. Like, that's, like, my trip to Europe is, like, well, I'm going to go explore a new basin today that I've never been to before, and it's fucking amazing. So, yeah, that's my version of, like, fun travel is, like, going to a new spot that's pretty close but, like, really difficult to get to without flying in an airplane.
Yep.
But as far as what I've been doing, I have took the e-bike out and went for a rainbow trail ride yesterday, and it was good. I mean, it's dry out there, but there's been a trail crew. Matt, do you remember who the trail crew is? It the CCC?
It was National Trails Day, so it was like SMT, CCMR, a bunch of people. I don't know.
But there was like an extra crew.
I don't know.
That came in from like out of town. And they've done a lot of really good work. Like, there's some sections out here, like on our end of Rainbow Trail, that were a little sketchy. Like, you had to like kind of dodge around like a big boulder that kind of hung out into the trail. And so like motos were kind of knocking the edge of the bench off and making it something that, like, if you were just on foot, you would just kind of tiptoe around. And they fixed spots like that, put in drains, just generally did like some erosion work. But like, they also, in like my favorite part of the trail that used to just be like, I don't know, this like downhill bike park type boulder section, they fucking took half the rocks out. And I don't understand why, because that makes erosion worse if you take rocks out. Like, they're embedded rocks. I don't mean like just rocks sitting on top of the tread. They dug fucking rocks out of the trail and like they just rolled them over to the side of the trail. And that made me real sad. It really did. Like, I get it. I mean, a lot of people bitch about any kind of erosion control type trail work because it's like, oh, you're sanitizing the trails. It's like, well, yeah, but like, 1,000 people use this every week, and every time someone rides a bike through here, you know, they like take a few cups of dirt and dump it in the creek downstream, like when it rains or whatever. I get it. Like, that stuff's necessary in high use areas, but like, number one, like, I would be surprised if 50 people rode this on a mountain bike every season. And, you know, it probably sees more moto traffic than that. Very little foot traffic. Like, almost no foot traffic. It's just a remote section of trail, and like, that didn't even make sense from like an erosion standpoint. Like, I think they made it worse. They made it like, there are a lot of sections of Rainbow Trail that are just like this kind of shoot of like loose sand and rocks that are like fist sized, and like that stuff, when it rains, like that's the stuff that washes to places where they don't want it. This is now like that. Like, it was rock and dirt that was kind of held together, and now it's just not. It's just loose dirt and sand and loose rocks, and the big rocks are all rolled off the side of the trail. And like, I just don't understand why they did that to that section, because it didn't seem necessary from any sort of a trail work standpoint. But other than that, it was good. Oh yeah, and there was a place where there was a spring near the trail that kind of like spread out across the trail and made a very long muddy section. And they channeled that spring into a channel that's like a little wider than a wheel. And I definitely crammed my front wheel into that thing, and my fork kind of made a few weird noises after that. So hopefully I didn't break anything. Hopefully it was just kind of unhappy for a second and it fixed itself, because I know that's exactly what forks do.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
So if it's anything, it's the high speed compression damping circuit, but we'll see on the next ride. I might go out and camp. I was going to work in Leadville this weekend, but talked to the boss there, and he said that service is pretty light and they can probably handle it without me. So I might just go and camp out, ride a little more, hike a little more, stuff like that, and do some exploring. But that's all I got. You guys want to talk about new shit?
Yeah, I want to talk.
Before that, we have exactly one patron question. One question.
While you pull that question up.
From a patron. It's right here. I got it. And I just want to, like, it kind of goes along with, like, stuff we've been doing, because it's about mostly Matt stuff. But we'll just do it now. That way we can talk about new shit till we're tired of it and we won't have to like squeeze this in. So this is from patron Mr. Bombastic. He says, actual patron question. How do you feel that Moto Trials has improved your mountain bike riding? And how do you feel your mountain bike riding has improved your Moto Trials riding, if at all? So, Kenny, you go first.
Yeah, go for it, Kenny.
To be honest, I don't think that either has helped either.
Okay.
I know that seems weird. Maybe confidence descending is higher on the mountain bike now, but I don't really feel like it is. I mean, knowing, because the Moto is so much more capable descending than a mountain bike will be, at least in my hands. But yeah, I still feel really exposed on the mountain bike. I did ride the other day did a little shop ride. Oh yeah, shit. I got some new tires. So sorry to completely derail this, but I just wanted to try them out. Okay, what are they? It is the Continental Cryptotal rears. I have two rears on 2.6 and trail casing endurance compound.
How was it?
Yeah, they're okay. They're kind of a mix between a DHR and a DHF, to be honest. They're very tall lugs, extremely tall lugs. They don't squirm around too much. I didn't fall in love with them, but I don't hate them. So I'm just going to give them time, get used to them. Maybe my riding might change a little bit once I get used to them. But anyway.
Well, after Matt talks, I have a question, like an e-bike / moto / tire question to ask you since you've ridden motos and e-bikes.
Sure.
But I'll let Matt talk about Moto Trials.
But anyway, back to my case, I just don't feel... Yeah, I don't feel like either one has helped the other one. I know they seem really similar, but they're pretty different. I think if you're an incredible mountain biker and you get on a moto, it won't take you very long to get fairly comfortable, especially probably descending. You would be pretty comfortable other than the rear brake situation if you don't have a left-hand rear brake. But all the guys that I've brought to ride motos who have maybe, you know, they can shift a clutch, that kind of thing, but they haven't really ridden off-road much, and you'll take them out on a spare bike and they'll do pretty good because they're good mountain bikers, but definitely they're not just like instantly amazing. And
yeah, going uphill fast,
it's very different.
Like, yeah,
it's very different. So anyway, my take on it is I don't feel like either one is maybe a whole lot better at the other. So Matt, what do you think?
I think that I know that I always say something like this, and then I say the most unhinged, like self-gloating thing one could say, but there's no polite way to put it. I feel bad saying it, but like, I'm just really good on two wheels.
You have no room for improvement on the mountain bike. So
no. I also, my mountain bike riding, and before people roll their eyes, and my mountain bike riding, and I think this is what's becoming of my moto riding, both trials and the enduro bike. I think with the enduro bike, I probably have the most to gain, but I will make the least gains there because I just flat out don't care. I'm not going to train to be faster, and I think that's going to be my limiting factor on the big bikes for the foreseeable future. And being faster on the mountain bike, there's only two ways to do that. I can get faster by pedaling really hard, which I just personally don't know that I'm ever going to do again. I don't know, because I said it last year and it didn't happen for this year. And I just don't know if I'm going to get to a point where I want to train on the bicycle again. Riding is fun, but I just don't know if I want to invest that time and effort into training. I will say that from riding more this year, it has helped a ton with the trials because I've been nerding out on things. And one of the things I'm nerding out on is nutrition. And I've been really trying to do a good job of taking better care of myself from a nutritional standpoint, especially while active. I'm not good at it during day-to-day life, but I'm getting better at it while active. Like for trials, I now have like a process of what I do between loops, or yeah, between like first, second, third loop, what I'm going to do, how I'm going to do it, and what order I'm going to do it in order to set myself up for success for the next loop. And
do you do the Red Bull first or the Bear Claw first?
The Red Bull happens while getting dressed. Mm-hmm. So last event I went to, I'm not good at eating before noon. I'm just not. There's something about it. It always just sits like a rock in my stomach. So smoothies go pretty well, even though they're very calorically dense, and hypothetically a bowl of oatmeal and juice would be the same thing as a smoothie with oatmeal and berries in it, but the smoothies sit better in my stomach than real food. Like,
well, it's just partially digested by the blender already. You don't have to chew.
Yeah, and it's just very tedious for me to eat early. But so had a smoothie, had a Red Bull, had a smoothie on the way there. It was about an hour away. I didn't get through the full 30-ounce smoothie. I tried really hard. Drank a 12-ounce Red Bull. And
I was joking about the Red Bulls and Bear Claws, but I guess that is the nutrition, huh?
I had a decent amount, probably 20 ounces of Gatorade, and then a snack. And I think my snack was a scratch bar. And then went out and did the first loop. And when I came back, my process is fuel in the body, fuel on the bike, go get your card, go do your next loop. And the reason that I eat first is by the time that I eat, you know, I roll up to the truck, throw my gloves on the tailgate, get food, put food in mouth, start chewing food, eat like half the bar, put the rest of the bar in my mouth, put the trash in the trash can in the truck, go grab the gas can. I have a full bottle of like a 24, 26, depends on the, you know, Specialized has made 1,000 different sizes of bottles, but a big bottle. And I finish that before I go out. So I'm drinking to get the bar down. I'm putting fuel on the bike. Just kind of look over. There's no bolts obviously missing.
You have water with you on the bike too, don't you?
No.
Okay.
The thing is there's only two ways to carry stuff. You either have to carry it all the time, or you have to get to the section, walk to the end of the section, put down your bag, walk back, get on your bike, ride to the end of the section, kill your bike, pick up your bag, put your bag on, get your card punched, go to the next section, repeat. So that's another one. If it was hotter, I probably would have dealt with a water, plain water bottle in my bag, but it sloshes.
I thought maybe you could just, like, I don't know, have like a reservoir in there and have some water with you while you ride. Like, you don't keep your pack on then while you ride.
I do, though.
Okay.
So, but the sloshing of the water gets me. So I think the real move would be, it's not a thing for right now, but, you know, I'm doing these three loops in 3.5 hours. So if I drink a bottle before I go out, drink a bottle between first and second, between second and third, that puts me at 3 bottles in 3.5 hours.
You're just kind of cameling up, so that's a good strategy.
And if it was hotter, the last event was actually just the most beautiful day that we could have had. It was almost overcast and almost raining and 70 degrees in Canyon City in mid-June.
Doesn't happen often.
It does not happen. It's probably been the nicest day. Like, Canyon's normally like 10 degrees hotter than here, and that was the last nice day that I would say we had.
So what I'm hearing is wake up, you have a McFlurry, and then you have a Red Bull, and then you eat a Bear Claw while you're on the trail, and boom.
Like, if a monster would work.
Nutrition,
if you can tolerate,
nutrition, like, game done.
If you can tolerate caffeine, and caffeine has like a dose response effect. Like, the more caffeine you can get in your body without it coming back out of your body violently from either end, the better performance gains you're going to see from caffeine. It's like one of the few performance enhancing supplements that's legal most places and that works. It actually works.
I mean, it's incredibly well researched, is it not?
Yeah, it is. It's like one of the most well researched things, and it works in a few different ways physiologically, like for both your brain and your body. So, like, that's like a number one thing. Like, the more caffeine you can take in before it starts to affect you negatively in your digestive system, then you just get more of it. Just have more of it. You're going to do better the more you have until you don't.
And my recommendation is keep it under 1,000 milligrams.
Yeah. Like, if you never have caffeine ever, like, start slow, because you will shit yourself.
But to get back to answering the question, because we all know.
This is a really long answer about how your moto and cycling are related.
But if you've ever done a mountain bike race that was longer,
sure.
You know, you start to understand the benefits of properly fueling.
Oh, yeah.
Yourself.
I think we all agree that nutrition is unbelievably important, especially anything over an hour or two, just like hugely important.
Well, and not only is it important from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint, and a lot of trials is mental. So what have I taken from mountain biking to trials? A better understanding
game.
of how nutrition works. Now, I'll disagree with Kenny, but maybe be a little bit more. I'm going to give an explanation and not just say Kenny's wrong. But if you've ever partied on two wheels, you can probably party on two wheels differently. You know, if you haven't ridden a bicycle since middle school and you want to start mountain biking or dirt biking or riding trials, it's going to be a kick in the teeth because all the body awareness, the spatial awareness, the understanding from mountain biking, like understanding that what looks scary can be really easy, but what looks safe can be really tricky. And I don't mean from I'm going to get hurt, but like, oh, if I just go over this rock, I'm set up really well for the next corner. Mountain biking at speed, it's in some ways safer to kind of preload and sort of pre-jump, bump over this, let's call it a rock that's, you know, under 2 feet tall and not going to chain ring you because of the shape of it, blah, 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 blah. You bump over that on the left side of the trail and you're set up for that right-hand corner better. Or I know that, you know, I can't just grab a handful of brake because a skidding front wheel is a face on the ground. It's not a turning, controlling, directing wheel anymore, right? So I think all that stuff transferred over really well. But back to sounding really arrogant, I'm just pretty fucking good if there's two wheels involved. So I think that I always am going to have a lot to learn with trials. With trials, I don't know that I really want to. I don't know how much more. Like, I want to be a better rider, but I don't know if I want to move up in classes much because the jump from advanced to expert is pretty gnarly. So I don't know. I think that there's a lot of transferable skills. And even if it's some of those things the mountain bike taught me zero clutch control. It's taught me nothing about dealing with something that weighs, you know, between 150 and 230 pounds, depending on the bike. It taught me nothing about, you know,
uphill speed.
No, uphill speed is easy. Going fast uphill is the easiest thing you can do.
It really is. I mean, the only thing that I have learned.
Hold on. Let me finish, though, there is the biggest, the hardest part about going uphill is looking far enough because we are used to going uphill sub 10 miles an hour. And suddenly I'm on this big bike with all this power and all this traction and all this suspension, and I can eat. I looked down at one point during the last big moto ride. I don't know if I mentioned this. I was climbing that section from Hayden to the top of Kerr at 23 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So what? I have a mantra for that, though. You're descending on your mountain bike. You're descending. You're descending. You're descending. And that tells me, like, I keep reminding myself that I need to approach this climb on the powered machine as if I was descending on the mountain bike. And it really helps me with my sight distance recalibration. I need to look way further up the trail. And it really helps me with my line choice because now that I'm going fast, yes, I do need more traction than if I were descending at that same speed because I need the traction to climb. But because I'm going fast, going back to that, I'm going to, instead of trying to snake through this stuff as if I were climbing on a mountain bike at 6 miles an hour, or 4 miles an hour, I'm now looking at it as, oh, I have the pace and I have the suspension and I have the traction and I have the power. I'm going to hit this rock and then miss one of the little serpentine squiggles in the single track, which will set me up to miss the next big rock, which will set me up to hit the rock after that to miss or to be set up good for the corner after that. So I think a lot of that stuff transfers if you. I've told this story on the show before. The first time I rode an e-bike, I went up 173 in Salida, which is a very tough climb. And I told myself, like, something's wrong. Like, you should be able to ride this. And I stopped and I gathered myself and I was like, it's not, like, I was riding in flat pedals and I was like, it's not the flat pedals. What is it? I'm like, you're hauling ass. And I went back to a good place to start, you know, within 50 yards. And I was like, okay, think about this like you're going uphill. And boom, it all clicked. And all that stuff, it's not a direct translation. But again, I'll wrap up after this, I promise. If you have, for argument's sake, if you're coming from dirt bikes to mountain bikes, you've learned to read the trail in front of you, or even vice versa. The only thing is kind of like helping yourself understand and recalibrate at what pace is that happening? Where do I need to look? But you've already gotten good at looking, deciding, committing, and doing. And the hard part is maybe some of that execution doesn't transfer over from motorized to pedal bike or vice versa. But the mental side of it is, I think, really good.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that what you're talking about as far as, like, that I'm kind of, like, in the, I don't even know what to call it. Like, right now, like, the last ride I did in Leadville on the e-bike, and I rode some moto trails, I kind of figured that out. Like, the traction is the really hard part on a bike. And that's, Kenny, what I was going to ask you about with, like, an e-bike. Like, climbing uphill has been difficult because it's like I can do it, like if I put it in a really low power mode, it's like I can do more than what I could do on a regular bike just because I'm not like out of breath as much. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still times when I just like fucking stop and I'm like breathing really fucking hard because I'm trying to go up this like vertical gravel thing, almost vertical. But like figuring out how much power you can use and still have traction is difficult. But I did start to figure out, like, oh, if I just like kind of go full speed up this, I can get over a lot of shit that I wouldn't normally be able to do at all on a mountain bike. So like I'm starting to figure that out. But like the traction thing is like really where I'm getting hung up. And I was going to see what Kenny had to say. Like, does it make more sense? Like if you're on an e-bike, like should you have a gnarlier front tire or a gnarlier rear tire than a front tire, like more like a moto?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable thing to do for sure. But I think you might, if you're in loose stuff, yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
100%. If you're in loose stuff, yeah, like get the longest lugs you can get on there. That's what's going to give you traction. Compound, yeah, of course that's going to help. But if you're on a slick rocky type thing, it's 100% compound. It's really almost zero your tread pattern.
Yeah, yeah. Everything here is loose. Like, it's everything that I ride, at least. Like, I don't know. Like, first, the trails in Salida aren't e-bike legal, which is fine. Like, I don't know. I feel like if the trail's kind of easy, I don't know, I could go kind of fast and it's a little more fun, but, like, it's not as interesting to me. Like, I can't imagine just taking an e-bike into Salida and riding like town trails. Like, I don't know. I've just, all that stuff is so rideable on a normal bike. Like it just doesn't, and it doesn't really appeal to me. But so like most of what I do is moto trails and like gnarly forest roads that I wouldn't even want to really drive my truck up. And that's like a lot of that stuff is just loose and traction limited. And that's been my limiting factor is how much traction do I have? And I've gotten a little better about like the balance of like trying to keep more weight over the rear wheel, but then also like trying to keep the front wheel from coming off the ground because it definitely wants to, because, you know, it's a 50-ish pound machine versus a motorcycle is a 200-ish pound machine. So, yeah, like it's the traction is kind of my hang up right now.
Yeah, try a more gnarly tire.
Yeah, I will.
I think you want to keep the tires balanced, though.
Yeah, I'd just go like the same gnarly tire front and rear.
Well, yeah, probably. Just run, yeah, I mean, you know, Asagai, you'd be fine.
Yeah, I'd run a 2.5 in the rear just for chain stay clearance and a 2.6 up front.
Yeah, I'll try something like that.
Got them in stock.
All right, now that we've talked for an hour, we want to do a couple of interesting new things.
I have a scary thing that we're going to cover really quick. So looking at recalls on Bicycle Retailer, the oldest recall does date back on the first page, dates back to January 15th. But I did some rough math last night because it just blew my mind when I saw this. Adult helmets recalled Walmart helmets recalled, Simfree helmets recalled, Samet youth helmets, 40 Todson helmet, or yeah, that's, 40.
Those are like most like Amazon type brands.
Yeah, Pro Rider 9000 helmets. Let's see, Favato helmets, Timu helmets, Guduk helmets. Like I totaled it up, and this year the CPSC has recalled about 60,000 helmets. So the one thing that I would say is just try to buy your helmet from somewhere reputable. And I understand it sucks because I don't want anyone, if I get a single pushback on this, I really just hope that you run over a piece of beer bottle on your next ride and flash your tire, because go fuck yourself. But like when you go to Walmart and buy a helmet, you expect it to be safe. Like, I'm not saying Walmart has the best quality stuff, but you expect it to be a reputable
product.
Like,
it has a standard it's supposed to follow.
Yeah. So, like, and I don't really think that that's Walmart's fault. I'm not defending the Waltons here, but, like, when you buy a helmet on Temu, like, I'm sorry, I don't have a lot of sympathy for you.
Here's a question.
You buy a do what?
Here's a question. What's worse? No helmet or a Temu helmet?
In some ways, I would say the Temu helmet. And I say that because I don't think that people, that consumers are buying that helmet because they're just cheap. I think they look and they're like, well, this helmet's $12.99. Like, I just want a helmet. Like, the person that's going to buy a helmet wants safety. So when they're sold the illusion of safety without the safety standards that a product being sold within the country that it's being sold to, it doesn't meet those standards. In some ways, I think that having that helmet is worse than not having a helmet from Temu, because that person wanted a helmet and they would have gone to Walmart, bike shop, Dick's Sporting Goods, whatever, and bought a helmet if it wasn't available there. That's just, you know, when
I mean,
you,
I think if you crash with a bare head or you crash with a Temu helmet, you're probably better off with the Temu helmet. But yeah, I mean,
my point being, when you've purchased the Temu helmet, you have checked off the I have a helmet. If you didn't buy that helmet, you would have bought a helmet from somewhere, hopefully, that didn't receive products that weren't up to the safety standards. So you would have a helmet that checked off what you needed for safety and actually was providing the safety you thought you were getting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say something kind of mean and insensitive, but like, natural selection is a real thing.
Yeah. And I said this last night off air to Andrea, which is, you know, some mom is trying to do the best and like buys her kid a, like, oh, my kid needs a helmet. So like, it's not even the kid's choice. So
funds are tight.
And it's either I can get a Temu helmet and some dino nuggies for the kids, or I can get a Walmart helmet and no dino nuggies. Like,
yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, you know, I'm a big nugget fan, but may have to forego the nuggies.
I think that if they weren't presented with the Temu option, they would have gotten the nicer helmet, which unfortunately still some popped up on the recalls that I talked about here, but they would have gotten a helmet that should meet safety standards. And then they would have foregone the nuggets or the Diet Dew or the whatever.
Man, so now what's worse is Timmy having a semi-okay Walmart helmet and starving, or Timmy getting some dino nugs and a Temu helmet?
Yeah, 1 week of low nutrition is better than a lifetime of feeding tubes.
Man, we're answering tough questions on this show.
So that's what I want to talk about. Also, Cannondale Factory Racing is folding at the end of the 2026 World Cup season. So that's a real bummer.
Yeah, they're going to focus on influencers.
Yep.
So, I mean, we've touched on this on other shows, but I don't like the trajectory of where the world is going with selling products and reviews. And I guess, is it any different than the ShamWow guy on TV and people buy ShamWows and maybe they're not that great? I don't know. Like, are there always going to be semi-sketchy people peddling their mediocre product? Yeah, I don't think there's any avoiding that. But I think we are running out of outlets that have unbiased reviews, because it's hard to have unbiased reviews, because you need to put food on your table and you need to get paid in some fashion. And how do you do that? It's difficult to do. And
yeah, we were watching YouTube last night, and I like was just kind of scrolling through like the short videos, and there's this guy that does I don't know, like he sees our, his thing is that he sees a recipe that someone's done online and he tries it himself. And he seems to have some kind of nutrition background or knowledge, at least, you know, basic, a little bit more than what most people have. And he actually said, I was offered $20,000 by this electrolyte supplement company to present and market their product on my channel. And I turned it down because it's not actually a good supplement. It's not actually what you need as an electrolyte supplement.
And that's the thing.
He said, it's not what you need. It's not what most people need. It's for athletes.
Yeah. So, like, I'm guessing that was Element. If I just had to read between the lines, because they have a fuck ton of influencers that just have, you know, their 30-second or 1-minute Element ad. And it's, that's not even something that fucking athletes need. Like, that's, I think the guy was being way too nice about it. Like, I don't know. Like, that shit is just overly stevia, salt, and other stuff that you don't actually lose in sweat. I'm not going to go into that physiology now because we've been recording a long time, but like, that's kind of a bullshit supplement and it's expensive and they are paying influencers a fuck ton of money to advertise it as otherwise.
But that's the problem is, God, I got lots of thoughts on this, but I think we're going to end up in a world where you can't trust anybody and it's just going to be a bunch of influencers who are all scraping for the same pool of money and will say whatever the fuck they're going to say whatever they need to say to get that paycheck. And there's going to be zero integrity.
At least when you have bike racers, like, I don't know. I feel like at some point people who are racing bikes at that level, like you can't drink a bottle of Element and expect it to do shit for you in a World Cup race. So they're not going to do it. Like maybe they have an Element sticker or a temporary tattoo or like a bottle that has that on there. I don't think any of them do, but like they're not actually using that. And a lot of people who race bikes, if you ask them about a sponsor product that they don't really like, they'll give you a really vague answer and be like, yeah, it's good, keeps me going. Like, but they're not going to give you a 1-minute ad about it. You know, like they're not going to just suck its dick for $20,000. So,
well, I think,
yeah, I can see. Oh, go ahead.
I think that there needs to be a requirement. So yeah, if I'm Supreme Leader, if you are going to make a statement about a product on a public platform and you have received compensation or the product for free, it needs to be like legally required that you state that openly at the beginning. And I know a lot of influencers and YouTube folks do that to some extent, which is okay, but it needs to be like absolutely understood that you are getting paid to say stuff about this product.
Well, and like YouTube has a thing, it's like includes paid promotion.
Yeah, I think there maybe we're getting better about it. I do see that pop up a decent amount. Yeah, maybe people don't pay attention, and just the way it's presented. Oh yeah, by the way, I, you know, use this thing and it's great. And you're getting fucking paid to say that, and you're trying to act just like a normal Joe, but you're really advertising this product, and that's I think what bothers me. So anyway, I just don't love the idea that they're going to full influencer culture, because we're going to get to a point where you can't trust anything anybody says about a product. And I don't want that to happen in the mountain bike / bicycle space. I think that's not good.
Yeah.
So we'll keep saying whatever the fuck we want to say because we're not getting paid. And if people if people do want to pay us or give us a product, that's great. We'll tell you. And people have done it in the past. And that's just how it is.
And when we don't like it, they kind of disappear into the ether. Like, fuck, I thought they were going to say something nice, but they didn't like it, even though they told us that if they didn't like it, they were going to say that. Fuck. Yeah. We can talk about all the 32-inch wheel shit that's in new shit next time.
No, there's one thing that we have to cover this week.
Okay, what is it?
Well, two things. We're going to knock out three.
Yeah, it's when you think about it, it's like four.
So Zwift released a $1,200 watch. It's not even a smartwatch.
It's actually like a manual, like it's a self-winding.
What the fuck did you just say? Zwift released a $1,200 watch?
That is not a smartwatch.
It's like an old school style like
Zwift
watch that
the indoor trainer company. Why?
They brought out a dumb watch. It's a Zwift and Bravour retail and detail. It's limited to 100 pieces, each individually numbered, with Swiss Salita SW200-2 movement assembled in Bastard, Sweden.
I mean, I'm just going to say, like, I watch a...
Hold on.
I watch a watch repair guy to go to sleep every night, and actually, like, a Swiss movement watch that's limited to 100 would actually be worth $1,200. Like, if you're into that kind of shit, like, you might actually want to buy that. But that's
I'm not being weirded out by expensive watches. I mean, there's an entire culture that revolves around unbelievably expensive watches, and I get it. If that's your thing, whatever. It's not my thing, but totally understand why that universe exists. My question is, why the fuck is Zwift getting involved in this? Like, they can barely keep their head afloat with their business model right now. Why the fuck are you doing this?
I don't know. Maybe they want to get more watch people into cycling. They're trying to tap into that market.
I don't know. I just think that if you want a nice watch that needs a battery about every 5 years, you should get a Bertucci. I'm still running a Bertucci from outdoors.
Yeah, like that happens.
And but why would you be so proud about Zwift that you would want to wear their edition of a watch? And the back of that looks fucking terrible.
Well,
I don't want
fucking
like orange thumbs up on the back of my $1,200 watch. Are you fucking kidding me?
There are maybe 100 people that love Zwift that also are into watches, and they're going to buy all 100 of those watches.
I don't know. Hopefully they sell them, I guess. I think that's the dumbest shit I've ever seen in my entire life.
I am going to say something, which is the real thing that Zwift did is they probably... Their ROAS, return on investment spend, is probably positive here because all these people are going to be talking about Zwift because they launched a $1,200 watch. So, Zwift, you win. I'm going to say, I'm going to read a sentence out loud that I never thought about before. There's a subreddit, brand new sentence, and this is definitely one of them. Shimano expands lower tier drop bar offerings with new hydraulic 9-speed cues.
How many of those brake calipers are going to leak out of the box? 50%?
No. I mean, it's going to be the same percentage as every other Shimano on the market. Like, it's not going to be better or worse. Like, XTR through MT200 has the same leak rate.
Yep, exactly the same leak rate.
So, like... When we're looking at the LS or the LR, the leak rate, it's still going to be X percentage. So,
wait. So, this is something I've never thought about until now. Do Shimano Road hydraulic master cylinders blow up like the mountain ones?
That's a great question. I don't think I've ever seen one. Maybe like one that had some weird blown bladder or something goofy, but they don't seem to fail out of the bore of the master cylinder like the mountain stuff does. That's a great thought.
Yeah. Interesting.
Very interesting.
They just fail out of the caliper. So,
well, that might be the next mod, is put a Shimano road lever on your mountain bike and it'll fix it.
I think we could wrap it up with that statement.
Nope. There or that one, yeah. And then we didn't talk about this last week because I wanted Kenny here for it. We did. Rimpax tuned mass damper for your gravel bike.
I'm sure, I guess.
It bolts on under your front brake. It is your front brake adapter / tuned mass damper holder.
I mean,
so it is
tune mass damper doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me for gravel. It seems like more of a gravity situation, but maybe I'm just wrong.
You know, it just every time a new gravel bike comfort thing comes out, it just makes me keep wondering. And every time I see, like, now with more tire clearance, we have bigger gravel bike tires. You're just making a shitty mountain bike. You're trying to make the shitty mountain bike work in places where you want to take a bike and places that would be better for an actual, just like a super light hardtail with a suspension fork. You know, people are like, oh, someone just smashed the Tour Divide record on a gravel bike. Well, guess what? If you put that guy on a 20-pound mountain bike with a suspension fork, he would have gone just as fucking fast, maybe a little faster because he would have been more comfortable.
Ooh, I don't know. Did you read about that yet? I just read the headline. The dude slept a lot and hauled ass.
Yeah, he would have hauled ass on a mountain bike with 2.0 tires.
I haven't got into it yet, like deep enough. My belief is that he was going fast enough that aero mattered. So I do think the gravel bike helped him go fast.
He could have put aero bars on his mountain bike. or drop bars on a mountain bike. Fuck. Like, put drop bars on a mountain bike. You can do that. It's legal. There are parts that exist for it.
So, winning a race on a rigid single speed, that's stupid too, right?
I'm just saying, like, that may not, like, you win a race within a certain, I don't know, spectrum of bikes. Like, sure, if you put that guy on a fucking, I don't know, an enduro bike, just to be, I don't know, like, exaggerate a little bit. If he was on an enduro mountain bike, yeah, maybe he would not have won, or he wouldn't have gone fast enough to break a record. He might have still won, but gone fast enough. But, like, if you put that guy on a mountain bike that weighed, I don't know, a pound more than the bike that he rode, that would be more comfortable, that would have gone faster over some of the washboard and the bumps because it has a suspension fork and it's not going to get slowed down by all of the chatter of that shit out there, maybe he would have gone the same speed or faster. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, people are just trying to make gravel bikes into shitty mountain bikes every time.
But that's not what he rode.
He rode a gravel bike.
He did not ride a gravel bike that's a shitty mountain bike, though. That's my point. He rode a fucking road bike that was enough for Tour Divide.
Yeah. And if he'd been on just a hardtail mountain bike with a suspension fork that was built super fucking light with some lightweight tires, he probably would. It wouldn't have made a difference, at the least. And he wouldn't have carpal tunnel by the end of the fucking race. Are we ready to read patrons and wrap it up? It's been a long show and we haven't done.
Yeah, there's a bunch of other. There's a bunch of other shit. Well, one of the other big ones in my book is the gearbox Avanox motor. I think this is where the industry is going. I'm convinced of it. Mountain bike drivetrains are not meant for e-bikes. They get shredded and they get ripped off and all the other bad shit. So I think DJI is probably going to kick everyone's ass again. That's it.
All right. We good? Can I read patrons now?
Sure.
All right. So our patrons, starting at $10 a month, we've got John, Kurt, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Krusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Raylo from the Block,
Mike Jones,
Cam Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland. Why are people still using my fucking name in Patreon? I'm a different person now. JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Chipset Coffee, We Caffeinate Colorado, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Moose Knuckle Tap Room, the home of open doors and heavy pours, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
Ooh, she nasty.
No, my name is Clayton, Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Redacted, Full Face Kenny Loggins, flying into the danger zone on an Amazon e-bike. At $11.11 per month, what's the difference between a garbanzo bean and a chickpea?
Mm-hmm.
At $14, we've got Patamelon Disco Ball. $20 a month, Matt and Andrea's Questionable Relations. Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds. Poop Wrench, and at $26.06 per month, Savannah Mohawk. Harley at 30, Andrea Knows About Shit at 31. And Six Pack Outdoors, purveyors of top shelf shenanigans and cycling events at Fitty. All right. Well, that's all I got.
All right. Shut it down.
All right. Bye.
Thank you all for listening and good night. Oh, fuck. I didn't stop it.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.